Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time to talk about the defense from that season-ending win against the Browns. The Ravens securing the AFC North with the win. Steelers would go down anyway in the nightcap on Saturday to the Bengals, eventually leading to a two-game margin in the AFC North. Anyway, joining me to talk about the defense is our friend Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, Ken. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a great time to be on.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, my friend. I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun talking about this game, even though the game itself, you know, we're just talking about it in the production meeting. It's probably less meaningful to draw from a game like this. The Browns had an awful game of missed tackling in particular. It's highly indicative of a team that didn't really want to be on the field.
Especially in the second half, it seemed like the Browns were a little bit competitive on defense, I think, in the first half, and came out, made some hits, made some plays, looked like they had some enthusiasm. But just in terms of what the Browns offense brought to the table, and frankly what the Ravens offense brought to the table, I didn't see a lot schematically, or I didn't read a lot into this game. And that's what I was talking to you about the production meeting. Like every game, win or lose, I can kind of say, all right, we were trying this, we were experimenting with that, we showed a little bit of this. And in this game, it was, for lack of a better word, very boring.
Well, on the offensive side, what we noticed in the offensive line scoring, just doing that tonight, and we didn't even get finished with it. We're 90% of the way through. We got a bunch of A22 checks to make because camera angles and camera timing to the line of scrimmage was terrible in this game, just absolutely awful. Nothing probably pisses me off more about the broadcast than that. I can deal with bloviated analysis of the game. I can deal with people who want to simplify it down to an acorn in terms of information that they're giving you. I can deal with all of that. But what I can't deal is not you're trying to have your head on the quarterback or the middle linebacker's eyes when it should be on showing me who's at the line of scrimmage and what that formation looks like and how the
all the gratuitous shot right before the snap. I gotcha. Yeah. Right, yeah. I'd like to see what we're in. Defensively, I'd like to see what we're in. The times of me watching the ball during the game have long, long passed. So I want to see what we're in, where the corners are, what the DBs are. I think they've done a better job, by the way, Ken, in the last handful of years of to where you can see the safeties. I feel like they've panned out gradually over the years because before you couldn't see anything with the corners once 5-10 yards.
That's a big shift since the switch to HD broadcasts, because the SD broadcast naturally didn't have the same width. They didn't have the same aspect ratio. So you get a lot more with an HD broadcast. Also, the additional clarity means you need less visual information to get those guys on the back end. And anybody who's done like work with participation by play, as we have for many years now, you get to peg the players by certain qualities. And I know we've talked about this with regard to Brandon Stevens' play at SMU. You could tell him by the red shoes.
For example. The shoes.
Yeah. Well, you got exactly that happening at the NFL level, whether it's different boots they wear, they're different armbands, they got different sleeves and whatnot. I mean, you're picking up information like that to get the players. And you don't need a whole lot of information. You just need clear picture to get it. And all the work we did to extend back to the very beginning of Ravens history on the defense, it's much more fraught with difficulty. In terms of getting that player, you have to, you know, you find yourself looking at the sideline to eliminate numbers and players who aren't there. I mean, just there's a lot more work to be done for that. But anyway, that's my big pet peeve with this is not being able to see things at the snap. Let's talk about the playoff picture a little bit, because I think this is, it's kind of a good draw for the Ravens in some ways. Obviously, might not wanted to have played the Steelers as much as the Chargers. I know that's, I think there's pros and cons to both teams. Obviously, the Steelers, they know very well, and vice versa. The Chargers, there's some familiarity also in terms of the coaching on that team. But, this is a Steelers team that's certainly in the dumpster right now with four consecutive losses.
You know, I don't have a strong preference, or didn't either way before found out we're playing the Steelers. I feel like if we lost to either one, it would just be a massive disappointment. And, quite frankly, this team that, you know, shooting for higher, but when I'm looking at the Chargers and their interior line, you know, their linebackers, I feel like in just saw the weather report for Saturday night. It's going to be brutal, Ken.
That's not good.
Right. And so matchup wise, from that perspective, I would say, give me the Chargers. They're lighter. The front four isn't as good. The Steelers, obviously a big old physical front four. Mm-hmm. And in a game which you might have to run the ball 30, 35 times, it's going to be hard to throw the ball. I'd rather have the Chargers. That said, the way the Steelers are in free fall, the miscommunications on their defense, though, Ken, you know, they can be exploited with a little bit of misdirections. They had a really hard time handling the tight ends, I think. So I could see the positives and negatives for both, but I always like the tiebreaker for me is the familiarity. The Steelers know us well. That usually leads to less, what would you say? Like the better team doesn't always win.
More playing down to each other, more.
You know, exactly. So, if you would have asked me, I would have said, give me the Chargers probably. But, overall, my goals are to, what better way than to beat the Steelers in the playoffs to start this run?
Okay, it looks like this is actually a little bit leaning towards above 8.5 points. Now, I would call the spread 8.75. Here's the logic to it. We have minus 105 lay to get the Steelers plus 8.5 and a minus 110 lay to get the Ravens minus 8.5. So that's telling you that the betting public likes that price on the Ravens a little bit better. Now that can change, obviously, as we get closer to the game, and in particular as weather becomes more understood as we probably get closer to what's going on. But that's a bigger spread than I was anticipating. I the original estimates I've heard were 7 or 7.5, and that's a really nice primetime game number, even for Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh have had tremendous success there.
You know, and I was looking at some odds earlier today. We are bigger favorites than the Bills to come out of the AFC or to win the Super Bowl. I think I was looking at the Super Bowl.
FTN?
The champion odds. It was Detroit, Kansas City, and then us, and then Buffalo. Or it was Kansas City. Right. Excuse me, Kansas City first. Then it was Detroit, and then us, and then Buffalo. And I'm thinking, man, they're really giving us a lot. We were plus 600. Buffalo was plus 650. I remember those numbers, but we're getting a lot of respect, Ken, is what I'm saying.
Okay, so here's what I have. I have the top three guys, the top three teams are Kansas City with a 20% chance to win the Super Bowl, Philadelphia at 18.3, and Baltimore at 17.6. And that uses the FTN odds, which are highly based on their DVOA rankings, where the Ravens are one of the greatest teams of all time, again, for the second straight year.
Okay. Right, so, the DVOA, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at DraftKings.
Okay.
Kansas City plus 340, Detroit plus 400, the Ravens plus 600, the Bills plus 650, Philly plus 750, Philly and Minnesota plus 750. And then it drops off tremendously. So it's
where's Detroit? What's Detroit in there?
They are second at plus 400.
Okay.
Just one more time, Chiefs 340, Detroit 400, Baltimore plus 600, Buffalo plus 650, Philly and Minnesota tied at plus 750. Okay. So betting market there.
Gambling markets usually know better in terms of the odds. DVOA, I happen to like as a statistic, in terms of what it brings. But it is what it is. And generally speaking, over the years has projected the Ravens as better than they've turned out to be. Of course, a lot of systems have, because the Ravens haven't had the playoff success that a lot of other teams have, but they've been one of the best teams in the history of this metric, which extends back to 1978, I believe now. So the entire history of the 16 game season, the Ravens of 23 were the fifth best team ever. The Ravens of 24 were the sixth best team ever.
I've seen those, and I think you had Aaron. Is it Aaron Schatz? His name.
Schatz.
Excuse me. Yes, on the show, and I like it both. I'm a betting market guy just because I feel like Vegas always wins, so that's always the first place I look, actually. But that's an old habit, you know what I mean? Way before DVOA, I would look up the bet. But 8.5, Ken, it does sound pretty hefty for a divisional game, and sounds hefty for a playoff game, like either way.
I think it's just reflecting exactly how, it's 122-5 right now. So this is saying the Ravens have, probably an 80% chance to win that game is what the thing is saying. That does sound hefty. And I wouldn't be betting my house on that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I wonder how Zay Flowers' injury, when it comes out on Wednesday, affects that line.
Wednesday is when you expect to hear something?
Well, I guess Tuesday, because it's a short week. So the first official practice should be Tuesday, and then Wednesday will be the Thursday, so-called Thursday.
There's a Harbaugh press conference that's usually the day after the game, but it might be Monday this week because it fell on a Sunday here. So there's a Harbaugh press conference where we might hear more about the injury before the first day of practice. But obviously, rubber will really hit the road on Tuesday when he's likely to be a DNP anyway.
Probably. And then, by Wednesday, that's when does he get a limited in? And then, Thursday would be the Friday. So Thursday, mm-hmm. we'll know who's out, who's questionable, and that kind of thing.
Yep.
But that could certainly move the line, Ken, because considering how big of a, lead team leader in targets and yards and all that stuff.
Yeah, I would think that would change things. And it's just, there is no substitute for losing Zay Flowers. It's an enormous component of the offense lost, as you indicate here. Let's talk about this game a little bit. Massive opportunity set for the Cleveland quarterbacks. And this was, I think, one of the important schematic elements of this game, where it's a game you can basically say both teams were kind of reticent to open the playbook entirely. They're certainly trying to get the game over with from Cleveland's perspective, maybe more. Myles Garrett seemed to be playing hard. He might be still playing for a DPOY or at least having a chance to have a really big sack number out there. But the one thing that the Ravens really did schematically that was deliberate was they did not rush a lot of numbers. And they did not, and we'll get to a lot of that specifically later. And they didn't really use very much scheme either. The Cleveland, their one strength, and their biggest strength by far as an offense, is a very good offensive line. And they're, other than left tackle, which is kind of a weakness, pretty much that whole rest of the team, a veteran group.
Very veteran group. A very good group, veteran group. And, for the future of that Cleveland Browns team, I think they're letting them get old, beat up a little bit, yep, altogether, kind of like reminiscent of Steelers defensive line from a few years ago. But it was a good group aside from the left tackle, and Jedrick Wills was a massive problem for them even when he was healthy.
Right.
I can see why the Ravens just decided to rush for rally and tackle, which seemed like the game plan, especially, you can look at the two quarterbacks, Dorian Thompson Robinson, somebody that you want to mush rush. You don't want him to beat you with his legs, especially since the game is moving way too fast for him as a passer right now. So the last thing you want to make him throw the ball. And then for Bailey Zappe, not a strong arm, cold day, just rally tackle. There wasn't a lot of threatening aspects to this Cleveland offense.
Yeah, he missed some throws certainly in this game. A wide open crosser to, I forget if it was actually Moore or Judy on the play, but right open left to right crosser near that right sideline. It looked like it would have gone for maybe a touchdown, but probably about 40 yards if it had been complete. And he missed it by a mile. It wasn't wasn't even remotely close, but just a kind of a poor coverage play on that to have a breakdown like that, and one that gets overlooked because the pass is incomplete. But aside from that, the coverage was really the story for the Ravens in this game. They made a number of plays on the ball that were good. They had good coverage to force overthrows. They did have a costly penalty on Stephens that helped set up the touchdown. But otherwise, they played extremely well, and Bailey Zappe was and Thompson Robinson combined were way under their expected yardage in this game, which is, you know, pass rush basically gave up a ton of ample time and space opportunities, which we'll get to in some detail. But the coverage made up for it, and they were terrific on the back end.
You know, I like our group. I just you know, I think everybody sees what I'm about to say, and that's that we have four really strong players in our base nickel defense, and then one player who's had a rough year. But we're going to match up pretty well, especially with the range of our safeties. Just really impressed with Kyle and Ardarius, and, you know, they are both prime examples of guys who, you know, the 40 time, you know, a track event doesn't outline play speed. They're two different things. It's, you know, something you and I talk about when we're talking scouting all the time. What are the instincts like? Yep. What are they like? What's the dog like when he's chasing a rabbit instead of just running fast? You know, like there's something to that. And, you know, I really like the range of our safeties. Marlins obviously had a great year, and Nate Wiggins looks like a future star, a great player. So, yeah, we have some talent in the secondary. I don't think this is fluky. I think the Ken, to throw it to you on this, the over-the-middle defense coverage with our linebackers and, of course, you know, Brandon Stephens at right corner are the two things that concern me most about the defense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Roquan has been okay. I think the problem has basically been at that weak side linebacker spot, and they haven't been the same there to start the year or to finish the year. And in between, when they were okay at that spot, it was because they had Hamilton playing the dime. But Kyle Hamilton can only solve one of your problems, basically.
That's right.
Play one of your positions. So you can have him at slot corner, and the Ravens do have another really good answer at slot corner. Marlon Humphrey's had a great year there. And they don't have an answer at free safety, which is the more important position, I think, of those two. And Chris Board has come along, had a pretty good game in this one. I'm sure we'll get to talk about him a little bit.
Sure, go ahead. I have more thoughts on that, but I think we're going to cover it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get back to it. I just want to hit on some high-level topics here to start with. One of the big indications to me that Cleveland mailed in this game was the missed tackles, particularly in the second half, but it really was true for a lot of the game. They were just slipping off, Henry and others, regularly in this game. They had a lot of missed tackles on Jackson himself, but 26 missed tackles by the PFF count versus 6 for the Ravens. The 26 is the highest number I've seen in any game, really ever. I can never remember a game that high. Now, there might be one somewhere. One game I tried to look and see if it had as many missed tackles by the PFF scoring was the 2020 finale when they had 404 yards against the Bengals. I thought that might have had a bunch of missed tackles, and it had some reasonable number, like 11 missed tackles or something. It wasn't a really extreme number. And that's kind of a normal number for any game, you know, that a team might have. But that difference, you know, tells you a lot about who is really playing hard. I think the wake up call for the Cleveland Browns was the injury to Hall and him getting carted off the field. You know, he's headed for a very tough off season. The Browns will miss him, no doubt, for the beginning of next year if the injury is as serious as it appeared to be. And I don't think the rest of the Browns had any appetite for that.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point, Ken, because that injury was scary. You add in Zay Flowers, his injury was, you know, made Ravens heart sink, Harbaugh's heart sink. And I think that was indicative. I mean, both of those happened fairly early in the game and kind of set the tone of like, can we just get this thing over? I saw many Ravens fans on Twitter echoing my thoughts. I didn't tweet during the game, but just like, just please get this thing over with. Like, 4 o'clock can't come fast enough. You know, I'm frustrated with the offense for not putting the game away earlier so we could get some guys out of there. Like, it just wasn't a good feeling. But yeah, that's a great point. A lot of missed tackles for the Browns. You know, Derrick Henry, a lot of I'm gonna dive at his legs type thing and swipe at his legs type thing. Lamar, you know, some of those, that one run I'm thinking of in particular that fans can picture. You know, I don't blame him for that one. That was just vintage
Lamar. Kind of dove over, landed on his shoulder and head.
Yeah. Well, no, it was like he started out on the left and then cut back to the right, yeah, but then squirmed up sideways. And then it was just like he made Myles Garrett whiff.
Yeah. And he then got turned around on the play. That's a different play.
Yeah. He got turned around on the play. And then when you thought he was stopped, then he got carried for a few kind of few extra yards. And Falele, I thought, did a great job of not only not landing on him, Ken, but like, I don't know if you noticed, he kind of pillowed him down. Like he was set, like laying somebody down on the bed so he didn't slam his head on the turf.
He was dragging him the last couple of yards. And
yeah, he dragged him, but then
could be a flag in the end. But yeah.
Sure, yeah, but he dragged him, but then had the awareness not to fall on him. That's what I was worried about. I'm like, don't break his collarbone, please, Falele. And then when he went past him, he like had the wherewithal to put his hands under his head, under his helmet. So I thought that was really cool play. But good. Yeah, that might have been like six of those missed tackles right on that play.
They had two sacks for the 17th straight game, which is, I think it's 20 consecutive games overall now, which is approaching the NFL record. I think the NFL record might be 22, might be 23. It's in that range anyway. So the Ravens are right there with the all-time record. Went the entire season. And I've heard far less positive about the Ravens pass rush this year than I have negative. Most of it's been, we've got to get Max Crosby. We've got to get him because we need Max Crosby because he changes our whole pass rush dynamic. I heard a lot of that during the year. And would Max Crosby be a nice player to add? Sure. Would he make all the difference? No. Most of the Ravens situation is schematic. Most of the pass rush was driven from the inside by Pierce and primarily Jones, you know, commanding double teams and creating these one-on-ones that make Van Noy look great, that made Owe be a much better finisher this year. They finished second in the league in sacks, and you'd think that from listening to Ravens fans that they were 24th or something.
It's true. And, you know, I love the point that you made about it being driven by the defensive tackles, and that's one of the reasons I think when we look in the draft next year, Ken, I'm looking for another Travis Jones. Yeah. If Michael Pierce doesn't stay, like that other big guy, to not stress Travis Jones, to keep that, like, you know, that young pipeline of guys that command a double team that can get some pressure, maybe not finishers, but you better not one-on-one, your pocket's getting pushed backwards because, you know, I made the point last week on my show, I don't think Jadeveon Clowney is any of a worse player this year than he was last year. I doubt it. I haven't studied him. I mean, I couldn't tell you, but I don't see him on the sack board leader with 10 or 12. And I think that has a lot to do with Madubuike, Travis Jones, Michael Pierce. That said, Ken, I will counter with the, you know, there's not a lot to Tavius Robinson's rush, David Ajabo, et cetera, et cetera.
Completely agree. Like
we really rely on Van Noy in a way to stay healthy in this thing.
The issue I have is this, that they've got limited draft capital as always to use. They have always places where good organization needs to get younger, and overriding all of that, like let's say they go in with four specific need positions, is if a Kyle Hamilton drops again to them at a position where they don't obviously need it, you got to take him anyway, you know, even if he doesn't exactly meet your needs. So the question will come up this year is to where they want to spend that. Do they, you know, they'd love probably to get a left tackle if they could. There may not be a guy who is around in, hopefully at pick 32, right?
Right.
will be there, but there won't be a pick. Probably won't be a guy probably in the 20s, even with the big, you know, wealth of cornucopia of left tackles this year. There wasn't anybody left at 28 when the Ravens picked, right?
That's right. I mean, yeah. I mean, you could have took Rosengarten there or whatever, but I mean, even your point stands. Like even in a historic tackle class at 28, you know, we went in a different direction.
Yeah. So I didn't tie back the point I want to make, and it deals with the edge rusher. People always point to edge rusher as being something the Ravens need because they don't have. The magic of DaCosta in part has been in finding aging edge rushers who could still meet the need. And I'm not sure who to credit that with. I think a lot of it is DaCosta. I'm thinking now that Chuck Smith is with the team, from what I've heard about him contributing to their draft analysis of players, that Chuck Smith may be a big part of deciding which current 32-year-old guy can help them still.
That's right. And offense helps too, Ken.
Yeah.
Good offense, you know, get you in that pass rush situations. You know, if I was a veteran pass rusher and looking for a 1 or 2 year deal, you got good interior. Yeah, Chuck Smith. You got a great championship team, a good offense. Like, this is a good spot for a veteran. And I think the Ravens, you know, get the benefit of the doubt in that almost in every position now. For a while, it was, you know, with Greg Roman, it was everywhere but receiver. Would love to come here. Tight end, you want to come here? Offensive lineman, yes. Defense, yes. But now I think it's in the current form, anybody would love to come play with the Ravens. You just play to your strengths.
And I think they are levering that to a good degree. But the Chiefs have been the, if you want to ring, come here team, that's just been, I've really hated the advantage that they've had in that way. It's one of the reasons why I can say dirty waiver claim play is probably in order. So one of the things that may happen, by the way, Calais Campbell may be released here at the end of the year. My understanding is, and Voss is the one who came up with this, I think he got it from a credible source, that if Calais Campbell is released after the season is over, he could be picked up by another team, but only if he clears waivers entirely. So, and if you're the Ravens, it's kind of a prisoner's dilemma situation. You kind of have to claim him. He's on a vet men contract effectively, just a tiny amount of guaranteed money above that. So you basically have to claim him, because the other risk is the Chiefs could get him. And the Chiefs, even though they draft behind the Ravens, they've got to feel like, we don't want to face Calais Campbell. We got to claim him just so nobody else can have him. In fact, you might even, if you're the Chiefs, you might even be concerned about Detroit claiming him. Just because you're thinking that far ahead. Anyway. All right, let's move on here. The Ravens, I want to pose as a question to you, because I don't think I've heard your answer on this. And also it's been changing kind of week over week. If you're ranking the Ravens in terms of defenses in the entire National Football League right now, where are they?
Well, I think I'm going to look at the 7 teams in the AFC. I think that's where I want to start. Kansas City, toss up. I take us over the Bills. I take us over the Chargers just because of the stoutness of the run defense. You know, Houston, yeah, I would take us over Houston. I think Houston has the same problems. I like our defense. I wouldn't say it's I see it phrased as a top defense around the league. I'm just not there yet. I think that there are weaknesses to be exploited, but, you know, there are also a lot of strengths that can't be exploited. Like, our weaknesses are clear. I don't think that this, like, Cleveland game, for example, was like, oh, attack Brandon Stevens. That's how I think everybody already knew that.
Right.
So yeah, I like our defense. I think from the teams that are left, I would say we're you know, 14 teams that are left. I would put us in the top five. You know.
Yeah, I'd for sure put the Ravens in the top five. I think the question is whether they're one or two or three now. If you look at what's happening from a weighted basis, they're much better recently. Philadelphia is the team that I would put ahead of them for certain. I like Philadelphia's defensive line a little bit better. I don't think there's anybody better in the AFC. And Houston would be the team. But the thing I really don't like about Houston, and why they don't match up well with any team that I even care if they play, which is any team but the Ravens,
right,
is that they're too small. They're just too small. Way yeah. too small. They've got good pass rushers. Will Anderson's a hell of a player. And the guy they have on the other side, number 55.
They have the Hunter.
Hunter, no. Yes, Hunter is also outstanding. But the middle of their line is just, they are a bunch of guys who were built to be penetrating three techs and undersized noses who can get in the backfield, but they're not meant to stand up against a big offensive line who's well coached and knows what they're doing.
And funny, Ken, I'm sorry to interrupt, buddy. That's what I see about this entire AFC, aside from the team that we're facing this Saturday, is what brought it up. I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's a lot of undersized teams, a lot of penetrating fronts that this Ravens offense can take advantage of in one block, and Henry's at the second level and good luck. I like our defense. I think that the defensive line, the interior of it is just excellent. Bringing back the same 5 guys that last year turned out to be a great move for this team.
Yeah, it did really work out. And if you know, the funny thing is, if they got Calais Campbell, the guy who'd be unfairly out, who's really had a pretty good season, is Brent Urban. doesn't play a lot of snaps, but he's played quality snaps. He did it again this weekend in the game, I thought. But you know, he unfortunately he'd be the inactive that would accrue if everybody else is healthy from Calais Campbell being a Raven. But boy, that would be something. If the
I don't know. Trust Voss as much as I trust anybody, but I've never heard of a player playing 17 games for one seat for a team and then joining a different team in the playoffs. Maybe you have, but that just seems so cheap to me that I can't accept it as seems like cheating. You know what I mean? It's like that. I can't fathom that as it could happen if it happens, I'd be ecstatic because I do think that Calais is a better player arguably than Broderick Washington. And that would be your second team defense. Would have Pierce and Calais Campbell on it. Now, that would be awesome.
I know we've been talking about the MVP race a lot on this show. I want to put that aside. I got two great pods coming up this week. I'm supposed to have Mike Sando on. We'll see if this app actually comes to fruition, who is an MVP voter. We already talked to Aaron Schatz a little bit about it. And I've got one other pod that looks like it's going to be really interesting that basically is handicapping all 50 MVP voters by what they've said on Twitter already and trying to decide where they are. So it's very interesting kind of a thing that will be out. I hope by Wednesday, probably there might be two pods coming out on Wednesday on the MVP vote. So keep it look on that. MVP votes are due on Wednesday and people, I guess the voters can start talking to the media at that point. And there'll be, of course, people who make the circuit of every voter and ask them so that they'll have the MVP announced, even though I believe that gets announced officially on Super Bowl weekend, right?
I think it's the week before the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I want to say it's the honor show. It's like that. Okay. 2 weeks. The Super Bowl is 2 weeks. I think that first weekend. Could be wrong though.
Okay. So there definitely there's been more discussion about it this year than I can ever remember. So anyway, we'll have some fun. We'll talk about that. And then I want that to be the end of the MVP discussion as far as I'm concerned, because votes will be in. There'll be nobody else to lobby about what's going on. It'll be just a matter of, you know, did they make what we perceive to be an error or not? And in how this goes. Let's move on and talk about some other stuff, though. Really outstanding third down results for the Ravens in this game. The Browns only went 4 of 12, and then they also went 0 for 2 on fourth down. That's a hell of a football game when you can put those two things together. Sometimes a team will go 4 of 12 on third down, but they'll go 3 of 4 on fourth down or 3 of 3 on fourth down. And that's really like going 7 for 12 on third down. That was the 2019 Ravens strategy to have a lot of drive success rate. But great job. And they only allowed one first down by rush in this game in particular. Do you take something out of that?
That kind of surprises me, considering how bent the Browns were on running the ball early. It would seem like first down run, second down run, third down pass. Now, you know, honestly, I haven't gotten the 22 yet to really study the game, but it did seem like game flow that we would give up more than one. That's a pretty good stat right there.
Cabote, I think, had that. It was a practice squad running back that they called up. They don't even have a picture of them on the Browns website, but they have about 10 guys that they don't have pictures of on their roster at practice squads. So it's not like there's nobody, but it is a little unusual for any team to have that. But Cabote had a 17-yard run, and it was a fairly well-blocked play and whatnot, but that was the only real run success they had the whole game. Otherwise, the Ravens stuffed them on all the short yardage plays. They allowed a bunch of 3- and 4-yard runs, and just a really, really fine game again of Orr's defense clamping down on the run. All right. Some problems with penalties again in this game. They only allowed 3 first downs by penalty, but they did get themselves in some trouble offensively with some penalties, that holding call on Voorhees, a couple of delay of game calls, false start, illegal formation, offset a flag for defensive holding at one point. It was annoying. Wallace actually had the illegal formation. Then he drew the penalty in the end zone for defensive holding. And it was unfortunate that had to offset, because the first one is just a lack of focus foul.
It sure was. But, you know, overall, the penalties is still something that concerns me going into the playoffs, because, you know, it seems like the same guys make the same mistakes. You know, if I hear defensive holding, you know, I'm thinking it's going to be on 44. If it's pass interference, as soon as the ball's in the air, I'm worried.
21.
Brandon Stevens is going to get called for it. And then Matabike with the rough in the passer, I think he's had 4 this year. He's had some over the years, and it's just like it's the same guys.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Doing the same type of things on defense. That does concern me a little bit. And, you know, especially, you know, as the games become more and more important, it could be one extended penalty, like a roughing the passer, when a cheap call like that, I mean, a BS call that can cost you a game. So I want to see our guys play extra discipline and do what Mike McDonald and Zach Orr have both done, which is just trust the talent of this defense. Just trust the talent. No need to do anything extra fancy and get yourself out of position. The DMP's effect that has taken over, just trust your talent, be in your spots, rally, tackle, rush, stick with your fundamentals, and we're going to be fine.
You bring up an interesting point, which is how much of the credit goes to DMP's for the defensive turnaround this year. I think he deserves some in terms of being a quality control guy, in terms of probably bringing a matchup-based pass rush scheming more to the Ravens. But I think we're also, it wouldn't be fair to take all the credit away from Orr either. I mean, Orr has adapted very well to what's going on. I think for one thing's been very nice, other than what the fans have said about it. I haven't heard a damn word out of the organization or from Orr personally about what's happened, you know, what kind of role Dean Pease has had specifically in this. And I think that's a good thing. We certainly don't want to hear anything from Dean Pease. He should not be at the podium. He should not be, you know, around a microphone at all. That's not appropriate. But Orr, the exact thing he should say is, it's been great having him here. He's an extra set of eyes. He's obviously tremendously experienced. That's the perfect thing to say, but he doesn't need to be overcredited for what's happened either.
Exactly. Zach's still the one calling the plays. Zach's still the one running the meetings. Zach has got to deal with the egos on defense and the highly paid players. It's not taking anything away from Zach. I do see, like, there was two main things. The benching of the safeties, especially the Marcus Williams situation. I just want to say first, because I have some, opinions on Marcus Williams, but I hope everything's okay in his personal life, Ken. Hope everything's good with Marcus. Like, at home, there's no kind of...
There might be something based on what's happening here?
Right, because like there's no way he fell... like, because what I'm about to say is going to be harsh, you know what I mean? And it's that I saw a player who, in the most blunt terms, it just didn't look like he cared. It wasn't a skill issue. I mean, the man was playing well with one arm last year. He's got plenty of range. I just saw somebody... When they kicked it down to Aaron Andrews a couple of weeks ago, and of course, they were complimenting Kyle on his, you know, oh, since Kyle Hamilton took over, you know, the greatest. And, you know, of course, that was just like cookie cutter type stuff, comments that Joe Buck and Aikman or whoever it was, Romo and Nance were saying. I think it was Romo and Nance in that game. You know, just basic Kyle Hamilton stuff. And he kicked it down to Aaron Andrews, someone who's reporting I trust 100%. And she said, yeah, when we were in the meeting with Roquan, he was saying that before Kyle Hamilton took over, he had to turn around and get the back of the defense set and then worry about what he was doing with the front seven. And it blew me away, Ken. Like, it burned in my brain. And I'm thinking, that's a player. How can Martin, you know, I had people in the comments on Twitter after I posted the clip saying, well, how could, maybe Marcus doesn't know, or did Gino know when he had to, this is not rocket science, people. Like, he's an 8-year vet. Gino could do it. Marcus could do it. There, you know, Roquan's got to get his guy set. He's got to get the front in front of him set. He's got to tap somebody on the butt, scoot him over. He cannot worry about what the safeties in the corners are doing. That's your free safety. So it's just, it's such a shame. We talk about Brandon Stevens and we want to take everything out on him. If Marcus Williams could play free safety, we wouldn't have a Brandon Stevens problem.
Well, it would be less, because Brandon Stevens wouldn't have to worry about
he wouldn't be starting. I don't think he'd be in the front five. I don't think he'd be in the five. I think you would have Marcus in his free safety spot. You could have Kyle Nardarius switch in between slot and strong safety, and you just put Marlowe on at right corner where he started his career, and leave him in one spot. And I think we'd be a better defense for it with the old Marcus Williams. But, so I'm extremely disappointed. It's a crusher. But again, that's why I wanted to start off with just saying, I hope everything's okay in Marcus's personal life. He's not dealing with some kind of tragedy that we're not privy to. And football isn't the most important thing to him right now.
I mean, that is possible. His per snap productivity is way off. I get the sense from what's happened. You know what? It actually does kind of fit, but I kind of get the sense he'd be gone already in any kind of meaningful sense. And he might be. It might be, Harbaugh's already said, okay, he's never playing another game for the Ravens. This is not going right. We can't release him right now because somebody else might pick him up and we're paying for him anyway, and it doesn't make sense for us. We got room on our 53. As long as we got room on our 53 to hold him in a safe deposit box, we're going to just stick him there. And it's even possible we might need him down the line if somebody gets hurt, because we got a couple safeties who are a little bit injury prone. Hamilton left the game twice this week. Ardarius is a smaller guy with the Bob Sanders effect always, looming in people's head about when he might get hurt. Very effective versus larger men, but you always got to concern yourself with that. And then, boy, there is no answer. And we kind of saw at the end of this game with the 30-yard play allowed that Cain and Braid are not the answer. Braid in particular took a very bad angle on the 30-yard play. I haven't seen anything from Cain that tells me he's anything more than a dime back prospect as far as being a defensive back. They played him on the back end. I'm not saying they haven't tried. I haven't seen one darn thing, not preseason when he played a fair amount, and not certainly in his very limited regular season action. Braid, all his positive plays came up close to the line of scrimmage in the preseason. So he's definitely a guy. And so what that tells me is the Ravens, a high draft value has to be placed on the free safety position next year to get Kyle Hamilton freed up to play again. Now, alternatively, they could in that case go to the free agent market, find a guy they really like who's maybe a younger veteran who would be a better chance to work out than Eddie Jackson. But you need to have some kind of a pedigree to go with that. Eddie Jackson, I cannot reconstruct the reasoning because I hated it so much at the time, with the 10 yards per target he'd allowed for four combined years there.
Yes, a totally different situation from Marcus with that. But, I think it's important for the Ravens to find another safety who can do a little bit of everything, so Kyle can do a little bit of everything. Because just because Kyle is, quote-unquote, the free safety, I mean, he's basically the right safety. He's on the right side. They still creep mm-hmm. him up on the line of scrimmage. And then when you do that, your second safety needs to be able to play in the post, or needs to be strong in the back half of a cover two look. So they cannot get a Bernard Pollard type strong safety, Jamal Adams type strong safety to play over Kyle. If you want the best out of Kyle, he needs a mini Kyle next to him, a lesser Kyle.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even – Kyle's so versatile, brings you so much in different points of the game. I don't need Kyle. I need a back end half field safety. That's the minimum standard. But I need somebody who can definitely play the back end and cut the crap in terms of giving me a strong safety who you can think you can fit square peg round hole into the back end on that. I mean the number of guys they've had to come through this team that could do that. I mean I like Chuck Clark as a player who could play a half field role. I thought he was good. He became too pricey for the Ravens to keep him around. The Ravens actually thought they had too many safeties, and they traded him right a year before the end of his contract.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to remember. I don't want to be incorrect.
Yeah. But I think you can find somebody like that elsewhere in the NFL if you're selective about what you need. But what they need is a back-end safety and not a in-the-box safety. By the way, the difference is between getting a top end of rotation starter and getting a reliever. There's a lot of relievers out there available. These guys who can play free safety truly have free safety skill sets. They're rare.
By the way, I think we should point out that Brandon Stevens has been the first man up at free safety in these instances that Kyle has exited the game. And, you know, when it first happened, a few weeks ago, and maybe it was because we were winning big in the game, but I remember tweeting out that I was bummed that Brandon Stevens was in that spot and not Bo Braid. And I guess in the Steelers game this past week, we got a taste of why. Or in this Browns game, we got a taste of why that Brandon Stevens would be the next man up at free safety.
Well, it's been a fair number of snaps that he's played back there in relief of Hamilton at the end of games, but also when Hamilton's been out for a few snaps here and there. But I was similarly elated, I would say. So my oppositely elated, I guess, is what I would say, to know that Stevens was the guy. Because as soon as you show that he's your third free safety, he's your third back end safety, I'm like, well, why can't they make that change, generally speaking,
yeah,
and move Hamilton back up?
Yeah, when we get to the mailbag, that's something that I want to bring up as a possibility, but I don't think it's happening. I think Kyle is happy where he is, like truly happy. And because of that, I wouldn't be surprised if that's where Kyle stays.
Okay, fair enough. The inside linebacker position, probably something we need to hit on too. Malik Harrison had a very bad missed tackle streak with this game, but he had only two tackles in the game, and he gave up a play in coverage on the very first play of the game. Kind of a tough targeting call, because it's one of these between level two and level three. Typically, that'll go to the underneath defender. That's the way I had that one scored as well anyway, that Harrison was the responsible party. But it's the very first play of the game, so you take a look at it, you decide for yourself if you think he's the coverage assignment on the play. So one to Aiken over the top of him. But they're not getting a whole lot out of Harrison, who is getting most of the snaps. He's been off and on. He's been okay. He's just been on this really bad. While the defense has gotten a lot better and Harrison is playing a lot more and Harrison's playing this versatile inside-outside role, he's been like kind of the one factor that hasn't really been playing that well during that stretch. It's really strange. They're relying on him more. He's playing poorly. And it's the one kind of unsettled position is that weak side linebacker spot.
It's very streaky in nature. The Chargers game was his coming out party, and he made so many plays. And I wonder if it was just the familiarity with, the Greg Roman scheme, something he had seen in practice a million times. But, we have to get that straight. I kind of Trent would be somebody else that we're about to talk about. I wouldn't put these two together and just say, it's pretty clear with the direction we're going for the rest of the season. You always kind of got to trust the Ravens coaches to what they're seeing in practice and so on and so forth. And maybe Trent does need a mental break, but I don't know. On these early downs, sometimes I feel like, with Trent, he's an aggressive player. I think he's a more sure tackler than Malik. Does he get bodied out? He's nowhere near as big and strong. But I kind of like Trent and Simpson's run and chase ability and the way they kind of sicked them on running backs in man coverage, to have Trent get that back out the backfield. I kind of like those qualities. So hopefully he's back next year and, can take a step up.
Yeah, I hope so too, because he certainly had positive times at times this year, and then he's had some missed tackles that he's piled up. But he had a really good start to the season in terms of his stop to missed tackle ratio, and then that has tailed off some. I have not checked it recently, but I don't think it's nearly as good, but in part because he hasn't been on the field too many to accumulate many more stops. But he's been playing only in the last series of these blowout games now, so it's really, they've been pretty specific about at first having it be a rotational basis and then really giving his job away to the combination of Board and Harrison, which is not high praise for Simpson.
Surely not. It kind of makes me wonder if he was a first round pick, they would have gave him the leeway that they gave PQ Patrick when Queen. He was here. Yeah.
I mean, Queen didn't deserve it either. I mean, Queen has obviously played really poorly his first two and a half years. And, that really didn't deserve to be on the field, honestly, other than they'd invested a lot for him capital wise. Let's see. The Ravens defensive line, I thought, really good job dominating the football game. Not happy with the two penalties on Travis Jones. Obviously, the roughing the passer was bad. And then the defensive holding was really bad when you looked at it in any kind of slow motion there. He's basically being engaged by the left guard, or maybe it's Ifedi, maybe it's a left tackle. But anyway, he's being engaged by one player and he's holding another from getting into level two. And generally speaking, you're allowed to use your hands as a defender. So if you're a defensive lineman, the general rule of not getting called for defensive holding, just put your hands on one lineman and throw him to the ground. You can basically do it whatever direction you pretty much want to. You're not limited in terms of how you can hold a play other than certain relationships to where the line of scrimmage is. And the main way you get called for this is what I call the Casey Hampton defensive holds, where you basically want to get a two-for-one double team on two offensive linemen by grabbing two of them at the same time and letting your linebackers behind you flow to the ball and make a play. And Casey Hampton was the master of not getting called for it all that often. He still got called for it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a headache. Well, I think our guys in general do a pretty good job of keeping the linebackers clean. You know, Matabike is a little bit of different, you know, body build and, but even he, you know, you notice in film, you slow it down and you look at it from, you can't always tell from one end zone angle. You look at from the other end zone angle and you see that little subtle check that he'll do with his right inside hand or you know, mm-hmm. left hand. Just a little, you know, pad check to the guy trying to climb up to the second level just to throw him off balance just a little bit. And, you know, you're talking about split seconds when you're talking about being able to get an angle or not on a linebacker.
One of the hardest things, by the way, you just brought it up, so I want to just go down this rabbit hole a little bit. One of the hardest things to really see when you're scouting players, when you're looking at film, is really high-end hand play. The high-end hand play you see from an edge rusher typically, usually you don't even notice it at all from the pass rusher. You notice it because the offensive tackle is flailing away like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and he can't seem to get his arms in a good space relative to that defender. It can happen on the inside too, but I associate it with like Liatu Latu coming out of this last draft was a big one where his hand play was just an outstanding off his hand placement. And, you know, he'd just spear a tackle directly and it'd be like he's hitting a bullseye when he does it. And you don't even really notice it on Latu. You notice it from the tackle anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's harder when the interior is even harder. At least on the, you know, if you get the camera angle on the, you know, you're usually getting the right tackle or the left tackle, depending on which way they're going down the field. But the inside, man, it's really tough to tell with these defensive guys. The one thing you can tell is who strikes first or yeah. Somebody consistently strikes first.
All right, let's move on to packages. And I only just want to spend about 2 minutes on this, so I'm not talking about a lot of time. But the Ravens, one of the big things in recent weeks has been the simplification of packages. Part of that is your most versatile player, you're forcing to play only one position, Hamilton. So you end up, they played one snap of jumbo. So that was that fourth down play, incomplete pass on the back end. But they had four down linemen in there, really were lined up heavy to stop the run. They forced the Browns to pass despite their fine offensive line. And, of course, what do you know? Zappe left it just a little bit behind the spot where it could have been complete. Humphrey made a great play on the ball, and the Ravens got the ball at a short field. They played four snaps at base, 1 yard allowed, two runs for one, two incomplete passes. Terrific showing for the base defense in this game. They don't put it on the field very often. Usually it was Urban was the third guy they would put in as a five tech in those. They played no snaps at big nickel. Now, this has been one of the things they've had to give up on. Basically, they don't have enough safeties that they trust on the field right now. So you got Washington, you got Hamilton, and they are reserved. They've got reserve tables on the back end. They don't have anybody who can be a safety in the slot for big nickel. They don't have that luxury now.
That's right. Yeah. You have two safeties basically on the roster that you trust. And we mentioned that, you know, Brandon Stevens is the third safety up. So, you know, we're dipping into the corner. If one of those guys have to, cornerback room, if one of those guys has to miss time. So the days of the big nickel that I loved, they're not, they're no more for this season.
Yeah, this is a Browns team, by the way, that didn't play very heavy in this game. They played pretty light, 1.31 tight ends plus fullbacks plus OL6. They just didn't have a lot of anything in terms of skill position players, but they had two healthy wide receivers in Judy and Moore who were reasonably good. And then they had a third wide receiver. They had Davis out there for some plays. They had some other guys. They had a handful of different tight ends, none of whom I know particularly well. Whitehead is one of the guys. Akins, I know a little bit better because he's been in the league for a long time, but they didn't have Njoku active. And the third tight end, number 82, I want to say.
I can't remember. Yeah. Because I was expecting Njoku to play, and I thought Whitehead would be the third guy.
Yeah. Number 82 is Brendan Bates, who they brought up. They don't even have a picture of him on the Browns website. So it's a
– Yeah, scouting that game wasn't something I spent a lot of time on because for that game, I mean, because it was just a lot of nameless, faceless dudes and a lot of question marks of who was going to play, like Denzel Ward. You know, it was just – it was very clear that this team was just a good example of why going to 18 games is you're going to get more football like that.
All right. They played the standard nickel. They played 43 times. They don't play any differences in their standard nickel. The big, big change they make is occasionally bringing in Tre'Davious White as on a rotational basis for Stevens. And even when they do have Stevens out, they bring him back on for the dime package, which they played six times. So those are all third and long kind of situations. They might have had an extra one at the end of the half. I think it was actually six plays on third down in this game, though. And they got him off the field three times. So it wasn't a particularly good day for the dime.
That's right. It's a very simplified. This defense likes to play sides. So Nate Wiggins is going to be on the left side of the defense. Marlon is going to follow wherever the slot receiver is going to go. You're going to have Brandon Stevens at right cornerback. And when they do switch it up, the only change they make, like you said, is they bring in Trey White in that right corner spot. And then when they want to go to dime, Brandon Stevens is your dime linebacker. Trey White comes in. So they're really working with the same four guys at cornerback.
And it's interesting. They did not originally, when they started playing four corner dime, they weren't really going against a 10 team. But they're really treating now Stevens as a true linebacker, as a will in that role now, as opposed to lining him up opposite a tight end who might be lined up hands on hips, right kind of in the – You'd call it in line, but offset from the line of scrimmage, generally speaking, with hands on hips. So he's
on the wing, right?
Even feet. That's the key for me when I'm marking that formation. Yeah,
exactly. And when they do play man in that situation, Brandon Stevens will either have the running back or the tight end. But it looks like tight end in that situation where Roquan his eyes on the running back.
That's the matchup as you draw it up, if you could, but the other team won't always allow you to do it, but sometimes right. They will. I do think there's so much untapped potential here in terms of the Ravens, in terms of traveling with Wiggins that could be untapped. And I do wonder if this team might go to that at some point during the playoffs. I'd be excited to see it. And I think it'd be one of these kind of things. It'd be a big change. But do you see any possibility that they pull this out of the hat as a magic trick for the playoffs for some particular opponent? Won't be against the Steelers because the Steelers don't have enough of wide receiver threats to really warrant it. But maybe it could be against Kansas City and trying to find the right matchup for, say, Worthy or Brown. They're awfully similar in terms of their speed.
I do not see it happening.
Okay.
I do not see it happening. Just being a Ravens fan all these years, just like you, Ken, doesn't seem like something that they would just spring in the playoffs. I think that they want to bring Nate Wiggins along the way they want to bring Nate Wiggins along, and they're going to have confidence in what they're doing defensively and not going to switch it up. Now, I think that the conversation going into next year is going to be a really interesting one because, I have some thoughts on that, and I think that Nate Wiggins is an excellent off-coverage cornerback. I think that if you asked him to travel right now, he's going to be 80% of the player that he is, just playing left cornerback in combination coverages, off coverages, the back half of cover three. Basically, Ken, playing with his eyes forward.
Right.
Your right cornerback has to bang with these big X receivers. Think about what we talk about. What makes an X receiver in the draft? The big, strong, route running, still do it all receivers. And Nate Wiggins' body type to me isn't that right now. Like, he needs another year or so of development. So I think he's a better player at left cornerback than he is somebody who would travel. And I think that it's going to be a really interesting discussion next year as to where, okay, do they do what I've seen them do with Travis Hunter in Colorado, which is first two downs, he's at left corner. And the third down, he goes and finds the Justin Jefferson on the other, Jamar Chase on the other team. You could do that with him maybe, but be really interesting to see. I'm a big fan of Nate Wiggins. I just don't think they'll do it. And I think he's a better player where he is right now.
Well, there's certainly the familiarity is there. The problem is it's not about, wasn't about where Kyle Hamilton was a better player, for example. It's where the Ravens needed him. And in the case of Kyle Hamilton, he decidedly, I think, has less impact on the game playing free safety, other than the fact that the player he's replacing is terrible. So you have a huge addition by subtraction bonus by getting Marcus Williams out of there. So that's the case. I mean, if you really want to go in the playoffs and come up with some different alignment, I think you could legitimately align the same six defensive backs they have in a different way and have a better defense.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that now, or should we save it for the
did a mailbag question?
Mailbag. Yeah. It's about Brandon Stevens. What can we do? Are there any alternatives? And, you know, the alternative that, you know, we're sneaking at here is that Brandon plays free safety. Then you could have a versatile Kyle in the box, Artarius in the box, switch those two different, completely different body types to where you want to match up with the opponent and have Tre'Davious White at right cornerback.
Hit us up with the question. The question that you're talking about from Film Study Mailbag. Is it Brett Hammonds that you're?
Yeah. But hey, Brett, about? It's good to hear from you, buddy.
All right, I'll read this question. I'm pretty sure I noticed Humphrey dropping back into split field safety role post-snap a couple of times. Okay, it's probably cover three is what we're talking about there. Did you see this? And is the beginning of the new strategy using Humphrey and Hamilton interchangeably? Okay. First of all, look, I'll give you your first shot at it in terms of what you think you're seeing. But I definitely am seeing Humphrey in some cover three situations. And I think it makes all kinds of sense given the year he's had and his value having eyes on the football.
Exactly. It's not the beginning of a new strategy. It's just switching up our coverage. Cover three is what we're in there. And, you know, you all will also see different versions of cover two and cover three, Brett, with Nate Wiggins handling the back end. And that's when you see Kyle vacate his spot and kind of hawk the line of scrimmage. Then you'll have Ardarius kind of, you know, scoot over pre-snap and play in the post. And, they'll give you the look there. But Brandon Stevens is the one guy that they try to keep out of the back half of cover two, cover three, usually.
Yeah. And that's a little unusual. If you're a right cornerback, you typically will drop to the back end of a lot of cover three coverages as played by most teams. Even though you can be the big banging X guy, you typically are a guy who they trust to cover a broad section of the field very effectively.
Other reason they don't want to move Wiggins, Ken. Like, Brandon Stevens is not very good. If you put him at left corner and ask him to play cover two or to, you know, pass, like, that's his weakness. He's better suited to be a right cornerback. The press man, like, that's his skills, and he does great throughout the route most of the time. And then we all see where it goes haywire.
So I'm not willing to say that yet about Stevens. And here's the thing. He's obviously got tons of experience from college playing all over the field defensively, even though late switch from running back, all that crapola. He played plenty of different positions at SMU. We've pontificated about his film any number of times on this show, I think, talking about what we saw from his play at SMU. But he's played plenty on the back end as an NFL defender too. All sorts of individual times he's been asked to fill in, like the Hamilton game where he had the suspension, I think it was in London, right? Wait, not suspension, ejection in London.
Right.
He went in and played some on the back end in that game. They've used him there. He's obviously got enough practice at it. They started expecting him, I think, to play that back end safety role at camp in 23. Before they ended up needing him at right corner. And then, of course, he plays every snap pretty much the entire season.
Yeah, but I mean, left corner, to interrupt you there. Like, if you put Wiggins and have him travel and Pickens is lined up on the left side, if you're going to move, you know, you got your eyes on the field already. Mm-hmm. You're going to ask Brandon Stevens to execute what a left corner is, but execute. And then you're looking at whole shots in between him and the safety behind him and things like that, covering over the middle, dig routes, and all the other things that a Z would run.
No problem with that, by the way. Yeah. I would basically agree that if you're talking about where would you like, what side would you like to have Stevens playing on, I'd rather have him playing right side of the defense to start right. with. But I'm hit the difference, and I'm not sure, maybe you said this or maybe you didn't. The difference is I think I would love to see them try to use Stevens in cover three, and I'm not convinced that he couldn't play a half field role on the back end of the defense. It's just the role he's in has all been about trying to stay with that guy in man coverage and try to basically be in his hip pocket the whole way. Yeah, he's terrible at turning and finding the football. Take him out of that position. Put him on the right. back end where he looks at the quarterback.
Yeah, we're on the same page, Ken. I think I just may have misspoke, or we cross signals on that. But they generally, if they're running cover three, they don't ask Brandon to be at the back end. That's usually Nate. This from what I noticed.
Yeah, I agree with that. But you've got versions of cover three have the stronger free safety coming up to play a short zone, and it's typically mm-hmm. one of the two which will play in the middle of the field, and the two outside corners very frequently, not exclusively, but very frequently in cover three looks will rotate to the back to play the back half of that zone.
Right, and I like Ardarius and those looks at that middle guy, the mm-hmm. robber kind of like. You know, for those that don't, you know, he's the middle guy, but he's not as deep as the other two. Just basically hawking all kinds of slants and crossers. His range is just excellent. His instincts are excellent on those.
Love it. Love it. Okay, my friend, always great talking football with you.
Love you, Ken. Thanks, man. Yeah.
We'll come back. We'll start with the pass rush in part two. I hope you'll join us for that. But Jason, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. Yeah. Twitter is at Huddle It Up Films. YouTube, Huddle It Up Films. Doing live shows on Wednesdays, 9:15. Been doing them by myself. Been doing them with Yuri and Ashley, and having some guests on. I think I'm gonna have Cordell on this week, Ken. By the way, if this comes on before Wednesday, but I want to ask Cordell about the vibes in the locker room and some other things with this being such a big week. So, you know how kind he is. He's taken. You know, I was a few minutes out of his schedule to come join me, but yeah, live discussion. I love the people in my chat, Ken. They give us stuff to talk about.
Sure,
always have good comments, man. And so I enjoy going live. We usually go from like 9:15 to about 10:15, maybe run over.
All right. Outstanding. Highly recommend the show. Really enjoy the vibe too. And it's highly interactive because it's a live show. He's actually Jason's trying to answer questions live. And I think you do a very good job, by the way, as a solo show, not that there's any harm in having guests, and you have me on as a guest sometime, but you're perfectly fine handling that solo responsibility yourself. You could have somebody else, but you don't need to have somebody else, Jason, is what I guess.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, I meant to say it when I had you and everybody else on, I kind of felt bad that I let people sit for a while. I was like, I bit off a little more than I could chew. I'm like, damn, I got Ken. He hasn't said anything for like 10 minutes.
No, that's all right. And that's the way it goes with panel shows, buddy. I mean, it happens for the draft for us is like somebody finally gets to talk after 7 or 8 minutes and they have the theory they're going through. And then I have to announce a pick. You know, it's the worst thing. So,
but I appreciate you and all your support on that. I really do.
All right, man. It's great to see you doing so well. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. There will be lots of opportunity for that. Here's what I'm basically looking for in a big way. I need to find some of the people who are strong proponents of moving on from Harbaugh for the reason it is. And you don't have to be a super strong component, but if you're somewhere 60th percentile or higher on it would be a good move to move on from Harbaugh, we're going to have some panel shows. I've got a lot of people who want to defend Harbaugh. And it's not hard to find those people. It's becoming much harder, despite the high vocal, what I would assume is a minority of people who want to get rid of Harbaugh on Twitter. It's very hard to find them and willing to come on the show and come up with a pros and cons list and really work through other people's questions about that. So I want to have a couple of different panel episodes that would relate to that. So if you're interested, first of all, just hit me up with a DM. And then if you want to submit a pros and cons list, I'll kind of help you with a format for that. But it'd be something that would help me then structure a couple of different shows to talk about reasons why it might be about time for the Ravens to move on from Harbaugh. I don't think it's happening probably before 2028, but that's probably the next likely time where where a change of head coach might occur. And I know there are people who think it should happen before then. Otherwise, thanks to everybody who's listening to the show. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you, Ken. Thanks, bud.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.